I am so excited about this show. I've got to tell you, my friend Melissa Ruggieri, you talked to her a few days ago. She works for the AJC here. She and I are going to see the show together Sunday night, so I'm really excited about this at the Buckhead Theater.
I can't wait to do that show. It's our last show after a whole long tour, you know?
You've been doing a lot of dates, pretty much back-to-back when I looked at all the cities that you were seeing, but still not a whole lot of cities. I feel like Atlanta's blessed to have you guys stop here celebrating David Bowie. You're going to love the Buckhead Theater. Tell me, Mike, whose idea was this to get you guys together to do this celebration?
I've been thinking about, once David passed, all the various alumni who have worked with David through the years. Some have passed, you know, obviously like Mick Ronson and Trevor Boulder, the bass player of the Spiders and all that. But there's a lot of alumni still around, and I just thought that's the best way to respect and celebrate and honor his music with the people who played with him. So the whole band, except for our drummer, is alumni, and the drummer is the son of Earl Slick, our lead guitarist. So that's Lee John. So genetically, we have it all covered.
You sure do. How have the shows been going? What does this bring up in you, especially early on when I'm sure you guys were a little bit nervous about doing this because it's such an unusual idea and such an original idea, I think. Tell me the feelings that you have from night to night as you've been doing this show with some of your old cohorts with David.
Every show has brought a lot of joy to the audience, and that's what we're all keeping in mind when we go on stage each night. And there has not been one bad show. Every show has its own magic, depending on the audience. But the common collective is that they all sing every word to every song from the second we get out there.
How did you choose the songs? Does that change up at all? Or you have such a plethora of music to choose from. How did you guys go, okay, this is what we've got to do for people?
That's the hardest part. I have about 40 songs, and we were able to do about 23 a night, and I keep moving around a combination of the hits as well as some of the deeper catalog and obscure pieces. That makes for a very nice balance. Like, the show opens up just with the Disco King, which very few people knew, which was from the Reality album. I think we cover something from the 80s, something from the 90s, something from the 2000s. And certainly, I would have to say most of them are from the 70s, just because you have Life on Mars and Changes and Starman, and we love doing those. So it should be a really good show. Jerry Leonard, he's playing guitar. He was the music director on the Reality Tour. We have, obviously, Earl Slick has been with us since 1974. He joined 2 years after me. Carmine Rojas on bass, and he played on Let's Dance, Blue Jean, Modern Love, China Girl. And Carmine and Earl Slick and myself were all from Brooklyn. David adored musicians from Brooklyn. His producer, Tony Visconti's from Brooklyn. So we have three Brooklyn guys. Then we have amazing singers. We have Bernard Fowler, who's with Rolling Stones for 30 years, and he's got an amazing voice. We have Joe Sumner, who also has an amazing voice. His dad is Sting, and he's been with us with this whole thing. We have another singer named Mr. Hudson, who is also a producer. He produced Duran Duran's last album, and he also produced Kanye and Jay-Z 5-6 years ago, and he sings great, and he grew up with David's music in England. So we have those three singers, and in Atlanta, we have a special guest named Evan Rachel Wood.
That's amazing that she's going to be here. I'm so excited about that.
I love her.
I saw Across the Universe, I remember, years ago, and I do remember about that because I was so floored by that movie. I loved it. And that they sang live, because I thought, these are the best lip syncers I've ever seen or whatever. And I read after I saw the movie that they were singing live. She's got a great voice. How did she get involved with you on this?
I met her on a recording date a few months ago at Capitol Recording Studios in Hollywood. And I said, this girl is good. And I did a little research, and it turns out she adores Bowie.
Oh, wow.
And she has the Aladdin Sane symbol on her thigh since she's 18. She just loves him. If you take a look after David passed, she wrote the most beautiful homage to him of anyone that I have seen, and I was reading it, and I said, this is the person I want, because she grew up with his music. She's going to do about 3 songs that night, and I think you'll be very, very pleased. So we don't have her till that day. She's just doing the last show with us. She did Los Angeles with us, and course, she has her whole acting career, right?
I think that's really extraordinary. That's very cool. And the thing is that she's a lot younger than I am. So I'm looking at her like she may have grown up with Bowie, but she wasn't around for some of those early songs. She's kind of an old soul, isn't she? That's funny.
I think that's what you're talking about. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Mike, I read your interview from Rolling Stone right after, and it sounded like you had been up for days, that everybody wanted to talk to you when David Bowie passed. And as a person that's been on the radio for like 35 years in Atlanta and having met him and seen him almost every time he's been here, it's such a shock to spread that word. You know, it's such a shock to have to be on the radio and you know, share that feeling with all your listeners. And so I've played the music for that long and have been a fan of his even longer. Tell me about some of the things that you talked about in that Rolling Stone interview, but tell me especially about maybe the final times that you were with him and the stage appearance that you were with him the last time in 2006.
Well, I felt things winding down then. We did a concert. The last concert was just him and me and Alicia Keys. We did a little bit of a AIDS benefit, and it was very low-key, but it was amazing. And the two of them sang Changes. There's not even a good recording of it. David didn't even want anything recorded. It was about a year after his heart attack. So he was very tentative, but he sang amazing and very deep. And he basically said to me then that he wanted to be a present dad while his daughter grew up for the next 10 years. And that's what he said to me. And he followed through on that. So I had a feeling we might not be touring for maybe 10 years. And then he had started talking with Brian Eno 3-4 months before he passed about maybe doing more of the Outside album concept, which we talked about it being a trilogy. But of course, that wasn't meant to be. So I had a little bit of hope then. But there was a biography done on my life at that period of time by a gentleman named Cliff Clapper. And it's called Bowie's Piano Man. And right about 3 or 4 months before Bowie passed, the biographer sent me about 50, 60 songs that he chose that I played piano on for David's, on his various of the 20 albums that I played on him. And he sent me about 50. He said, "You please listen to all these and evaluate them." I had never done anything like that, especially in a 3-hour stretch. So I listened to them all, and I was actually floored, you know, and I immediately wrote David, "I can't believe this." And he wrote back within 3 minutes saying, "We did a great body of work." It felt like that was our final conversation. I remember saying it to my wife when I got off the phone. "I don't think I'm going to ever work with him again." Because he said, "Mike, we did just an amazing body of work." And it felt final. I can't explain it. And of course, when he passed 3 months later, I understood why.
Oh.
He didn't share his illness with me, which we were friends, you know.
Well, you're probably more than friends. It sounds like you're family, kind of. I mean, if you've been around that long, and it doesn't sound like he kept that many people around him for that many years, you must have been very close and devastated, because it certainly came out of the blue for us. He just didn't want anybody to know, did he, that he was...
I don't think he wanted anyone to know. And, you know, I was only hired for 8 weeks, and I lasted 1,000 concerts with him. So it's a crazy thing. Plus, I never knew his music when he called, so that made it even wilder.
Tell me about what you preferred or maybe enjoyed. Maybe it was a nice break each time you did it, playing live with him or being in the studio with him.
Equally great in a different way. I never had a bad concert with him. He had the best spirit when he'd come on stage. He'd be transformed. It was like he was channeling the music. And every studio experience was phenomenal, because he only called me when he felt I could deliver the goods to him that he was looking for in his vision at the time.
And that was a lot.
I was a lot, yeah.
Have you watched the HBOs? I'm sure you have. The last 5 years?
I got to see it 2 years ago when it was just finished in London, because a few months after he passed, maybe left, Lord sang with us Life on Mars.
Oh.
And they had a showing for us. That was for the Brits Awards, but they had a special showing for the band of that movie. I mean, I had been interviewed for 3 hours for that, but they only could use me in a few spots. They're going to save it for other documentaries. But it was, to be honest with you, very depressing. but it was done very, very well.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I thought I was surprised because I thought it was going to be more of the last year's. But then when you saw the old performances, I was just riveted. It made me so sad. It just made me so sad because it's like the end of an era of this person that's kind of defined our lives with what his music was doing whenever we were going through those decades, isn't it?
I mean, everyone I've met, this guy has been the soundtrack of their life. You know, and everyone has a story. And in that first few months after he passed, I did over 150 interviews. And I never found myself actually repeating anything. It was, I just would talk based on the questions of the interviewer, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm still that way because you have so many experiences. Living on a bus with a guy for 113 concerts in one given year, for example, in 2003 and 2004. No less the ones I did in 72 and 73. You know, to do 1,000 concerts with one person and play Life on Mars 200 times.
It's pretty extraordinary.
You gotta figure that it's profound. You know, when he's alive, you take it a little for granted. And if I have any regrets, it's that. And that teaches you something about life and to cherish every second we have, you know. So when we go on the stage now, we're really representing his music. The band sounds as good as when we back them up. And you can't do it with one singer. That's why I'm using four singers, because there's so much to his vision and his character, and talk about old soul, you know. So you're getting a very good feeling when you have these great singers who are not trying to imitate him, but have their own voice and portray the best they can his music, and then backed up by the people who play with him. Look, it doesn't get any better than that unless David was here.
And that's right.
I don't know how to resurrect him. We have to deal with what we have.
That's right. And that's what I want to tell our listeners is that, you know, there won't be a seat to be had by Sunday night for sure. But if you're a David Bowie fan, this is the closest you're going to get. And we're so...
There's hundreds of tribute bands. This is not a tribute band.
Right.
It's the alumni.
This is the band.
The guys who played with him the last 5, 10 years, and in fact, 20 years, you know, because Carmine was with him in the 80s on the Sirius Moonlight Tour and Spiders, the Glass Spider Tour, you know. And I did his first American concert and his last American concert to have such a wide range. Nobody is phoning the show in. That's the point I'm trying to really make here. We go out there, and all we want to do is bring as much joy as we can to the people who are out there. Otherwise, I really wouldn't do it, because I have my whole jazz career still going, and my classical career. I work on healing music. I work with a brain surgeon, neurologist. So there's a lot of interest I have.
Oh, wow.
But a good 50%. Yeah, yeah. That could be all of the...
Yeah, good. We'll have to talk some more later, yes.
We'll do that another time. But this is taking about 50% of my time. Before these 27 concerts, which we do 4 in a row and then a day off, very, very grueling tour in a bus. Before this, I did 7 shows in Europe. And before that, a month earlier, I did 6 shows in Europe doing the whole Aladdin Sane album. So I've been committed to this for, you know, quite some time. Plus, last year, I did about 7 concerts around the world.
Wow.
They each had different bands. We had alumni in all of them, but for example, on this tour, Sterling Campbell, our last drummer, he's out with the B-52s for their 40th. Gail Andorsey wanted to do it, but she's out with Lenny Kravitz for the whole year touring. They're rehearsing in the Bahamas as we speak. So it's one of these things that not everybody's available, but I could see over the next 5, 10 years finding alumni all around the world who work with him and have him come up, sit into a song. I talked to Nile Rodgers. He said he was interested when he's free. I spoke to Carlos Alomo when he's free. I spoke to a drummer who played on the Glass Spider Tour. We were in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and he lives there. And he came up and played Let's Dance with us. His last name was Childs. I never even met the guy.
Oh, wow.
He's a great drummer. So I have this vision to just include whoever I can.
What a legacy. You're doing this for, I'm sure, his family thinks this is wonderful, and I know that his fans do. I mean, that it's just wonderful that you're doing it, Mike, and as such a busy and talented guy that you are, that you're incorporating it into your life. It should be a mission for you, I think.
And it sort of evolved spontaneously, and I didn't even look to run this thing and be the musical director and the MC. It just sort of fell on my lap. I was initially thinking I'd do some, just an evening with Mike Garson, solo piano, tell some stories, play some songs with a singer or two. It turned into a pretty big thing. We were ready to have gigs booked for Europe for his birthday next year. And we have three concerts in September in California and in Reno, Nevada. So the word is out that the band is great, and they're inspiring the audience, and the audience is inspiring us. And that keeps me going. When that's over, you'll see me stop it.